Welcome to another episode of the No Ceilings Podcast. I'm Tyler Metcalf, joined, as always, by Tyler Rucker. Rucker, how are we doing?
I'm just living life, you know, feeling fantastic. I'm pumped to see you, Metcalf. We're recording this right when the basketball games tonight are about to tip off, so I'm sacrificing my pride to be with the draft diehards to talk some basketball with Mr. Metcalf. You know, it's an easy decision. I'm just happy to see you. Sorry about T-Wolves today. Wow, what a just an unbelievable bit of drama we had on the line this morning.
Wolves back, you know.
It's
just vintage Timberwolves and, you know, vintage Glenn Taylor. So
yeah,
you just love to see it. You love to see it.
It's always fun when rich guys get, you know, power struggle mode. I love that stuff.
Well, you know, why settle for $1.5 billion when you can get two or 2.5? So
yeah. I get it, you know. But I'm doing good. You know, I'm pumped for some college basketball startup tonight. I'm pumped for this episode as always. I'm excited, and draft season's really kicking some ass. You know, it's scary to look up right now and be like, oh my gosh, it's almost April.
Yeah.
And then that, you know, everyone at No Ceilings knows when this is when we start going like, oh gosh, here we go. Buckle down. Everybody get to the bunker. So I'm excited. I'm happy.
Yeah. And I think that this episode will be just a bit of fun, just kind of reacting to the first weekend of the NCAA tournament, winners, losers, reactions, all that kind of fun stuff. We are recording this right as Arizona is tipping off, so I appreciate your sacrifice stepping away from your team to do this. But hopefully once we're done, jump in the second half, and you know, for your sake, I hope they're blowing out their opponents. But we're just going to kind of run through first weekend reactions, and then we're going to jump into rookie roulette this week. GG Jackson, it's been a couple of weeks behind, so I appreciate everyone's patience, but it should be a really fun segment. Really fun rookie year from GG, and then we'll wrap it all up with the green room. But before we kind of dive into that, just a little bit of housekeeping. You can find all of our written work over at NoCeilingsNBA.com. A lot of awesome stuff going up this week, last week, next week, all the time. Really fun stuff on the paid tier as well, and the stuff going on in Discord. Everyone over there has been an absolute blast. Really fun kind of interacting with everyone over there as well. And then please go support our friends over at Underdog. They've been awesome supporting us this year. Link and promo code in the description, both of the pod and of the stream. Promo code No Ceilings. Our entry for this week is Donovan Klingon, higher 9 rebounds. Mark Sears, higher than 2.5 three-pointers made. That's a little scorcher. So you get 1.1. I think this one was 1.1 times the payout. And then Cam Jones, higher 2.5 three-pointers made as well. So Underdog Fantasy, go check them out. It's a lot of fun going on over there. They got offerings across the sports landscape and across the board. So promo code No Ceilings. All right, Rucker, where do you want to start with the first weekend?
Well, I think it's always important. We've talked about this on previous episodes, but it's always important for us to say, like, you know, it's very easy for everyone to overreact, especially when it comes to the draft. It's very, very easy because we're all watching now. One guy has a good game, we're all like, hey, we got to move him up. One guy has a bad game, we're like, well, what are we talking about? Like, it's, you know, Kentucky getting bounced early was such a bummer just because I wanted to see more of Reed Shepard and Rob Dillingham and Justin Edwards. I wanted to see what they could do with a lengthy run. The game was awesome, but for the draft purposes, it kind of sucked. And it's also hilarious. Like, those guys had a bad game and the YouTube comments have just been very aggressive for attacking Reed lately. So that's been fun to see. And it's just everyone needs to pump your brakes. You know, I understand it's easy to be like, what are we talking about? Why was this guy projected here? But I think we always got to take these games with a grain of salt. It's important for some guys might pop that you haven't caught your attention all year. So then you get to go back and kind of reevaluate where they were at and see if you maybe missed something. And there's been some guys that really impressed me that are no longer playing. There's been some guys that still are playing that I think are starting to find their groove. What about you, Metcalf? What do you go into this? What's your takeaways? Does it sway you any way, or does it make you just be like, I got to get back in the lab?
No, it, I almost always go into March Madness almost just stubbornly refusing to let any of these performances sway my opinion too drastically one way or the other.
You put it great. You said, like, you take this time to be a fan.
Yeah.
I feel the exact same way. I'm sitting and watching and being like, I'm going to watch a damn basketball game. Like, yeah. I'm not going to, like, freak out about, but if I see something that I'm impressed by, or yes, that it will make me go back into the well of watching film to see if, like, hey, is there something I missed all year? But I'm watching these games as fans. I'm not watching these games as, like, I'm going to move a guy up 8 spots on my board.
Yeah, no, for sure. And, you know, I think the example I used last time was Franz Wagner, where he struggled once Livers got injured. He, you know, the bulk of the offensive creation responsibilities was thrown onto him at the last minute, and there's a new role. It's a chaotic atmosphere. And as we've seen throughout the history of the tournament, older teams tend to do well. It's really a really hard setting for young players to thrive in and to really take their games to the next level and carry their teams to a championship. It's tough. It's really difficult to do. And when I think it's really easy to overreact and get into panic mode about some of these guys and just gauge way too far in one direction or the other. And you mentioned the Kentucky guys. Let's stick with them for just a little bit. Yep. Here, because they sucked. They were really bad in that game. Aside from Antonio Reeves, no one in that game played well. But it's also not something that's been entirely uncharacteristic from Robin Reed all season, where Reed was incredibly passive. I mean, he had, what, 5 shot attempts? 1 for 5.
That's, I don't think they had I think they had like 2 shots combined at halftime.
Yeah,
I was like, Rob, what's going on? I'd be,
Rob was 1 of 5,
going ballistic in the locker room. I'd be like, what are we doing here? You know,
Rob was 2 of 9. Reed was 1 of 5. That's inexcusable. And that's what that tells me, is that obviously, one, poor coaching and not adjusting to Oakland zone. And 2 is a couple of freshmen who got caught up in all of it. But that inefficiency from Rob, that's shown up a lot throughout this season. The kind of passiveness from Reed, that's shown up a lot this season. If you go through Reed's box scores, don't take this the wrong way, I still really like both of these guys. They're still easy top 10, fringe top 5 guys for me. But when you look at Reed's box scores, there are a lot of games where he's in single-digit scoring. It's not that common for him to go in and take over a game, and that's been one of my concerns with him when we talk about him as a potential top 3 to 5 guy, because I don't think he's going to be that guy who elevates the team and takes it to the next level. However, I think he's going to be an just absurd complimentary piece, someone who elevates the games of everyone around him, but not single-handedly. So I don't know, to take that whatever direction you want.
No, I'm with you. I think this year, you know, I'm guilty of every basketball fan, anyone that enjoys watching this awesome game. I box score watch, and I especially box score watch late at night when I'm doing 15 other things. And I'm like, what film do I want to watch tomorrow? Like, who had a good game when it comes to box scores? And when you box score watch with Kentucky this year, it didn't seem like it was ever both of them had a big night. It seemed like it was one or the other. If it was like, oh, looks like Reed had a bound night, I'd immediately go to Rob. And then you'd be like, Rob had 25 and got lightning hot. And it seemed like it would switch the other way. And that's why we love March Madness, because any night, any game, you cannot have it. And we've talked about this with scouting before. Like, what does the off night tell you? Yes, it's very easy. We just spent the first 5 minutes of the episode talking about don't overreact to this, but it's very easy to look at that and be like, okay, is there good stuff I could pick up from that game? Does that make me go back and reevaluate the games where he was not having a big night, like was passive? I you know, there's been people writing articles that have been like, those are the big losers, Dillingham and Shepherd. And I'm like, eh, let's calm down, let's pump the brakes. Like, it's, I can't believe watching that game, I was like, why can't they figure this out with 2 lethal shooters? Like, what's going on? Like,
yeah,
they're daring you to shoot. Like, those are 2 guys you don't want to dare. So it was just a fantastic move by them. But yeah, it was nuts watching that game. I was just like, when are they going to turn this on? And then it just was like, they're not going to pull this off. Like, they got no shot. So I don't know. We spent way too much time on Kentucky, but I love it. But I do think it's important to point out those guys, because I think overreactions are going to be running wild for a little bit. And, you know, I have had questions with Reed, like you. Mm-hmm. I still think he's going to be an absolute stud. I don't think you're drafting him to be a Reed Shepherd's the savior. I think you're drafting Reed to be like, we have a very damn good piece alongside our foundation right now. And I still feel very highly about Rob.
100% agree. Both have had incredible seasons. Don't let that one performance overly skew your evaluation of them. I just take the bulk, take the other 30 game sample, not just the one. All right. Where do you want to go from here?
I mean, let's talk about someone playing tonight. Kling Klong, baby. Donovan Klingon. That's my favorite nickname. I thought someone made that up on the line, and then everyone's calling him it. So I was like, gosh, I really am just out of the loop with the cool slang. Metcalf, he looks really good.
He looks very good.
We talked about this, me and you. We talked about this, month ago, maybe? We said if he stays healthy and he starts heating up and they make a run and he's playing good, like, things are going to get really interesting in this space. Now, for whatever we're going to say right now, we have to say it's all going to come down to medicals. We've said that all year. Yep. If he goes through the pre-draft process, that's going to be probably the number one. Are the medicals good? Like, we're all going to be waiting. Like, was Klingon's medicals good? That's probably the first text I'm going to send to someone for intel. And if those check out and he keeps playing like this, I think he's a top 10 guy. I think he's going to be a top 10 lock. I think he should be right now. That last game he played was absolutely absurd. I think he had 8 blocks, and we had some fans say that he got screwed out of 5-10. It sounds like they were correct. He, in his last 8 games, is averaging 14-10 with 2 assists and 3.4 blocks. He's in a groove, and I think we're starting to see just how good he can be. And I really do think this is the guy that's making some noise. And it's not just from the tournament play.
Yeah.
He's been heating up. And I was like, if he keeps carrying this in, that's where you start going, okay, Klingon looks healthy finally. He's rolling. They're playing him more minutes. Like, I think he's looked fantastic. What about you?
Yeah, so a little spoiler alert, but I wrote about him for Friday over at NoCeilingsNBA.com. Shameless plug. Let's go.
We're back. We're in peak form, baby.
This dude's insane. He is so good. So, you know, I love some Bart queries. So I looked at just everyone always talks about how dominant he's been on defense, and it shows up in the film. Sure as hell showed up in that Northwestern game. But, you know, you always kind of want to see, okay, how real is this? How translatable is it? Because a lot of times guys who are 7-2 in college have outlier stats because they are 7-2 in college. And when they go to the pros, obviously that outlier size and strength and physicality kind of becomes more of the norm. So I just wanted to see what his kind of numbers looked like. So from freshman, sophomore, from among freshmen and sophomores from two high major conferences going back to 2008, who had a defensive rebounding percentage of at least 20, a block rate of at least 10, and a defensive box plus minus of at least 5, we get Anthony Davis, Chet Holmgren, Donovan Klingon, Walker Kessler, Karl Anthony Towns, Nerlens Noel, Joel Embiid, Mo Bamba, Robert Williams, Miles Turner, Isaiah Jackson, Ryan Dunn. That's the list.
Some big names.
Now, I'm not saying that there. I'm not saying that he's for sure going to be one of those players or all of them or MVP or any of that stuff. But what he's doing is stuff that is translated to the next level. Everyone on that list is an NBA guy in some form or fashion. Obviously, injuries have derailed some guys. Some haven't quite lived up to the hype. But a lot of those guys have played very, very real minutes in the NBA. And Klingon, I put those kind of benchmarks in there, and Klingon's pretty comfortably over all of those. So it was just it stood out because everyone talks about the numbers, but when you actually look at the other players in recent years who have done the same thing at the same stage in their development, it's pretty eye popping.
Okay, let's have a little fun here. Klingon keeps rolling.
Yeah.
He keeps playing like this. UConn gets to the national championship. We don't care if they win. He gets there. So he's playing a lot longer. He goes to the combine. Everything is green light. Would it shock you if he goes top five?
No, because looking at number five right now, I see Portland, and I love that.
The thing is with this class, we're getting all enamored about potential upside. You know, Alex Saar, well, he's special defensive talent, was very raw offensively. I think he's got a ways to go, but crazy upside. Bezelis looks much better the second half of the year. He's playing with some strength. Mm-hmm. I love the defensive strides. Shot hasn't come around. Upside. Castle, upside. Topic, questions about the shot, but gifted playmaker, all this stuff. We're going to know what Klingon is if he's healthy.
Yeah.
He's a dominant big man inside that's humongous with good feel, good hands, rim protector. If he's healthy, why would we not consider him in the top five? Like, we know what he is. He's a known high caliber. Like, I think the playmaking slept on, like you were hinting at. The shot blocking's legit. We just saw it. So I don't understand why we all can't get into the point of like, hey, no, this is legit. Like, this is, we need to start warming up to Klingon being a big riser, because this is what we wanted to see. He's showing it in a small sample size. So if everything's checked out and you're getting this version of him, I don't see why we can't be in love with him. He's a sophomore, humongous human being, but it is just great feel. And we talked about this last year with him. I was like, I think there's playmaking chops just waiting to get unlocked. And we're starting to see it.
Yeah, and I think the defense is solidified as just... he's arguably the most dominant defender in this class. I don't think that's entirely outlandish to say. Obviously, there are some guys that you can make an argument for, but when we talk about the offense, I think there's so much more with this passing to get unlocked. And I've kind of been running this little highlight clip here of some of the assists and stuff that have stood out to me. It's his processing, his vision, his accuracy. It's all really, really impressive. And something that really stands out in his numbers that, you know, as I was writing this piece for him on Friday, was as a freshman, his assist rate was like 7.4 or so, and his turnover rate was 15.8, give or take. The numbers are in the piece. Go read it. But that's about what they are. And this year, those numbers essentially flipped, where...
Which is a humongous development.
His assist rate was... like 14.5, and his turnover rate was down to 7. So more minutes, more usage, passing more, and the turnovers are non-existent. He almost essentially completely cut them out of his game. I think he averaged under one turnover a game. That's incredible. That is absolutely incredible for someone who's that physical, who's making some of those passes that we just saw where they're bounce passes through traffic, you know, finding cutters, skipping it over the defense to opposite side shooters. It's really impressive, and it's passing that's not just – the assists aren't just, hey, I'm double and triple teamed in the post because I'm bigger than everyone else and I'm just making a simple outlet and guys are knocking down open threes. It's reading and reacting to guys getting back cut and defensive rotations and all of that kind of stuff, and it's timely, it's quick, it's stuff that's going to and should translate to the NBA level really seamlessly. So I get that there are concerns about his offense and that, yeah, he's a little heavy footed. He doesn't have awesome touch around the rim. He's in like the 91st percentile in at rim finishing because he's fucking massive. Is he going to space the floor? No. But does he have immense gravity when he rolls? Is he a really good vertical spacer? Absolutely. And then you factor in his screening and his passing, and it's going to unlock so much stuff with him initiating and creating for others out of dribble handoffs from the elbow, from the top of the key, from the post. I have almost zero worries about him fitting in offensively in an NBA context.
I agree. And I'll say it again. This is all coming down to medicals.
Yes.
Like, this is all coming down to a green light. And because if it doesn't, if it's not a green light, if it's not a shining green light, yes, we're all going to be like, eh. And I'm saying he's known, because I'm so high on him right now, because I'm saying the playmaking is being unlocked. Like, I saw him last year when I was evaluating him, because we thought he might have been a party crasher for last year's class, mm-hmm. before he said, I'm going back. And I was like, thank you. And I saw him make a pass. It was like a slip screen, and he caught it and immediately like turned through a jump pass cross wing on the money. And I was like, whoa, that wasn't a fluke. Like, that is, you have something that's there. And now you're seeing this big of a leap when it comes to his ability as a playmaker. Like, that's why I'm saying you could talk me into him in the top five easily, because now it's a 7'2", 280 playmaking big with defensive chops. Like, I just think this is getting really interesting in a hurry because of Klingon's showing to end the year, carrying it into March. Like, if he keeps rolling, this is a real serious conversation we should all be having, because he has the tools to really be a heck of a piece.
I 1000% agree. It's scary with the medicals, and yeah, I cannot wait. And, you know, I did see that, you know, Dan Hurley said that the foot injuries that he sustained, even though they were on the same foot, they weren't related. So I don't know. I don't know if I feel better or worse about that. It's like, oh, okay, so multiple things are breaking on the foot, or is it like, oh, or is it a fluke? I don't know. I can't wait for Intel season. It's going to be a blast. Intel's it's going to be incredible. And it's going to be what the determining factor with him, or at least with his draft stock, unfortunately, is. Let's take a quick break and we'll be right back. Okay, Rucker, what direction you want to go in?
I want you to pick, because I picked the first one. I kind of threw a softball because I knew you're writing about Clint Kong.
Let's go Neek Clifford. Struggled a little bit against Texas.
I thought he was.
Oh, yeah, that didn't surprise me.
Because did you see who's guarding him right to start out the game?
Was it Dylan?
Yep.
Yeah.
I said, Dylan's gonna take care of this. Right when they won, I said that Dylan Mitchell's gonna get assigned to him, and I don't know if Colorado State's gonna have the firepower to stick with him. And I think he was kind of shadowing him sometimes. But go ahead, sorry.
Well, no, and that's because they saw what he just did to Virginia, and he was incredible in that Virginia game. There have been a lot of questions about Neek's ability to kind of attack closeouts, his ability to kind of put the ball on the floor. He did all of it in that Virginia game, where he was attacking closeouts, he was creating for others, he was crashing the glass, he was defending at a high level, he was knocking down shots. Hell of a time for him to have one of his best performances of the year, but that was kind of what we've seen from him all season. What were your thoughts on Neek?
Neek had the game in which I think is the most important for evaluating. If you haven't watched him all year and you watched him in that game, you're like, whoa, this kid's a stud. This kid looks great. And then that makes you go back to be like, did I miss something? Mm-hmm. And you, like, I've been posting a bunch of season highlights on YouTube. Thank you for everyone, for our channel has been growing like crazy. Like, I actually have Neek is coming up on my list. I've got a couple of guys ahead of him, and then I'm going to do his, but he's got good numbers. He's a great story. He was at Colorado, didn't get a lot of run, transferred to Colorado State, has been fantastic this year. I've been shocked that there hasn't been more buzz about him, because I think it's just a Swiss Army knife that makes winning plays. Guys like him, Tristan Silva, who I want to talk about later. Like, I just think those are the potential valued steals with, you know, their way to impact the game in a number of different areas. You know, Neek had good numbers this year. I mean, people are going to have questions about the outside shot. They should, but he still averaged 12, 7, and 3 with 1.4 steals on 52, 37, 75. He's 6'6". He's tough. He is awesome defensively. Like, he is so much fun. He plays the game with a little bit of like a jerk mode. Like, I'm a big fan. I think that's, if you get him in the second round, I think that could be a robbery. I really do. So I'm interested. I also think he's a guy that should go play at the combine. and probably could be this year's Dylan Jones of last year, in which all of a sudden he looks fantastic in the combine and people are like, whoa, hold on. And then maybe that heats up. But I just, what am I missing? I feel like Neek needs to get more buzz.
I totally agree. I've had him as like a fringe first round guy for most of the year. I know Corey's been super high on him. I know, you know, a handful of us at No Ceilings have really liked him all season. And I think he's one of these guys where it's really important to scout him in the context of what he's going to be in the NBA.
Yes.
Where if you're scouting him, because he is arguably, you know, if you want to say Isaiah Stevens, okay. But I would say he's the best player on that Colorado State team. So if you're scouting him as, oh, look at this dynamic wing creator who can defend guys, and what is he going to do off the bounce? How is he playmaking for others? I think you're kind of really just missing what Neek is going to be in the NBA, because that's not who he's going to be. He's not going to have the ball in his hands. He's not going to be a playmaker. What he is going to be is a play finisher, an off-ball shooter, and an elite defender. That's what he's going to be asked to do. So when we look at him and what he's doing in those situations in college, that's where it's like, oh my God, this dude is thriving. And he's 97th percentile in spot up scoring, 66th percentile in transition, 93rd percentile in cuts. When we look at just shooting off the catch, 89th percentile, 50th in shooting off the dribble. That's where it becomes an issue. But when is Neek ever going to be asked to shoot off the dribble? When is he ever going to be asked to run a pick and roll? He's not. And if one day he gets there, awesome. More power to him. He's just going to be even more valuable. But the vast majority of his offensive possessions are going to be spotting up, shooting off the catch, cutting, and running in transition. Also, defensively, I know on off are a little wonky, especially with teams like Colorado State, where there's a huge disparity in starter quality and the depth of the bench. But Colorado State had a defensive rating of 95.5 when Neek was on the floor, which was about 16th. And when he was off, that rose to 104.6, which was 136. I know that on-off stuff is a little flawed, especially in college and all that kind of stuff.
I understand. But it's still a damn number.
That's a huge disparity.
Yes, it's a huge
disparity. So I think what Neek showed in that Virginia game is that he's exactly that kind of 3-and-D depth rotation piece that every NBA team wants. And when every trade season, every free agent season, we always look at, all right, who's getting signed? Who's getting signed as these depth pieces? Who's getting signed as these kind of gadget guys who do a little bit of everything, the dirty work that the stars don't want to do? Neek is the guy that's going to fill a lot of those holes.
Yeah, it comes down to this for me. I had a good talk with Maxwell. Shout out Maxwell. We were talking the other day, and we were actually talking about Devin Carter. And we're just talking about like, oh gosh, his film's fantastic. I mean, I said, yeah, he's one of Corey and Albert just did an episode about him. And I was like, hey, one of my favorite film dives I've done yet. Mm-hmm. And where I'm getting at with that, with when it comes to Neek, is I'm a big believer. Sorry for swearing. I'm a big believer in the asshole trait. Like if you have that look on the court, that you're just going to figure it out. You're going to find a way to make an impact. You're going to find a way to figure it out at the NBA level. And I think Neek is right in that category. Like you watch him play, he's a bad dude on the court. I think he's going to be a really good player at the next level. I think he's going to figure out a way to be an asset in a rotation. That's where a smart team might take him and be like, this guy's going to be in our playoff rotation. He's going to come off the bench and be a defensive asset, be able to hit, you know, open threes. And he makes some great plays, you know, with his playmaking. I just love his game. I think it's a guy that understands there's a role for him at the next level if he keeps doing what he does at a high level. So I just think Neek needs more attention. I think the team's going to look really smart when they draft him.
Totally agree. All right. Who do you want to bounce to?
Let's do this. Let's talk about Jared McCain.
Love it.
Where do you have him?
Oh, boy.
Yeah. I knew I should start like this.
Oh, no. See, now you're going to get me in trouble. And this, I promise people, this isn't reactionary. It's been like this for a couple weeks.
I know how you think, and I know how you like. I know when you keep talking about someone in a group chat or you keep texting me, I was like, I know what Metcalf's doing. Like,
I have him at 7.
I don't think that's crazy. I'm, as CEO of the Jared McCain fan club, we're very happy with that statement. I've been pumping it all year, so I'm happy that I'm not that crazy. I love him. I absolutely yep. love him. I've got him at 13. I don't feel great because I want to move him up more. There's a lot of guys ahead of him that I want to move down. So things are getting real vicious with my board right now. I don't know what there's not like, what isn't there to like about him? What is it? The painted nails? Is that his red flag? Like I seriously watch him play. He's everything I want him to be. He's 6'3". He plays like he's 6'7". He rebounds. He can shoot. He's a player you'd love to play alongside. Like, is this a little bit of a Derek White? The idea?
The defense obviously isn't there.
No. I'm just saying, like, one of the guys you draft and you're just like, we have a good asset in our backcourt. Derek White is an unbelievable defender. He's lengthy. Jared's not going to probably have a great wingspan, I'm guessing.
I bet it's about even.
Yeah, that's my prediction. Gosh, what was he at the combine? Nah, I don't remember. You mean not the combine? Hoops, I mean. Drink. Yeah. So, what am I missing?
I don't know. The size, like Dirty Dancer says in the comments, just want more from on ball at 6'2". I get that, but that's all. I think that's also really ignoring the context in which he's playing in, where they have Jeremy Roach, they have Tyrese Proctor, they have Caleb Foster, and they had
Caleb Foster until he got hurt. Correct. But yeah, I hear you.
And they have Jared McCain. And those are all guys who can play on ball, but Jared McCain is by far the best off-ball shooter and off-ball player. So what has he been kind of forced into for the sake of cohesion and chemistry and flow of the offense? He's been forced into that exclusively shooting guard role. Go back and watch his high school stuff. He played a lot on ball. He played point guard. He was the best passer at Hoop Summit, I thought. Drink. Corey and Albert just did an awesome breakdown of him on their episode for Thursday over on the podcast feed. Go check it out. I wrote about him the other week as well over at NoCeilingsNBA.com.
Fire.
There's so much more to his game than just spot-up shooting. He's not just a shooter. This year he's been asked to be just a shooter, but that's not just who he is. I legitimately think there's Jamal Murray-esque, Jalen Brunson-esque upside with him, because he's stocky, he's strong, he runs a hell of a pick and roll, he can play off 2 feet, he's really good finishing around the rim, his craft, his strength, he can play off 1 or 2 feet. Like when we look at the quote-unquote small guards in this draft, or towards the top of this draft, he's one of the best at-rim finishers there is, and he's shooting over 62.3%, or shooting 62.3% at the rim this year. That's about 10% higher than Rob Dillingham. I don't know what there is to really not love about Jared McCain. And a lot of it's going to be, oh, he's not playmaking as much as we want, or he's not a big time space creator. That's because he's being asked to play shooting guard. He's being put on the wing to launch threes. And guess what? He's arguably the best shooter in this class too. So yeah, I think there's just so much more of the on-ball stuff to his game. And I think he's really going to be one of these guys where, 1, 2, 3 years from now in the NBA, we're going to look back and be like, God, why didn't he play point for that Duke team? Just like we've said about, 45 Kentucky guards over the last 10 years. I really think he's kind of fallen into a similar mold as a lot of those guys did.
What I love about him is the rebounding at his size. Like, everyone can talk about the size, but like, if you go back, like he was 2-time Gatorade Mr. California basketball in high school. His senior year, he averaged 17 and 7 with 4 assists. So he was rebounding in high school too. So that tells me the mentality. I think we have to also take into consideration teams are probably going to freak out when they interview with him, because he is just like ball of energy. He's got this personality that you're probably going to be, gosh, we had some interviews today, but McCain just blew the doors off. Like, you're just going to be like, he really took over the room. And that's probably a guy you want in your locker room. So it wouldn't shock me if he just kicks ass during the pre-draft process, despite the measurables, despite the, maybe he doesn't have a plus three wingspan, whatever. At the end of the day, who's a hooper? Like, that's my big thing. Like, who in this class is a hooper? Who's going to be able to play at the next level and figure out the role? And I think McCain's there, like, adapt or die. That's what he did this year. He figured out a way to adapt. They needed someone to step up. He became a dangerous shooter. He's still rebound. Just a big fan. I think he's going to be safe. I think he's going to be one of the safer guys in this class because you're just going to get a good player.
I agree, and I think that's still significantly kind of diminishes how much upside there is with him.
Yes.
Just to touch on the rebounding, what do you think Cody Williams' defensive rebounding rate is right now?
Not great, Bob.
9.2. What do you think Dalen Knecht's is?
10.3.
14.4. What do you think Jared McCain's is?
21.
not quite that absurd. 15.5.
Yeah, but that's absurd.
And he's 6'2". So he plays so much bigger than he actually is.
Yeah. Desire. That's mentality. That's the desire on the court. Like, you're working to go get yourself in position to be a rebounder.
Yeah. And arguably best shooter in this class. Awesome passer. I highly recommend going and checking out some of the high school stuff if you can find it, because he runs a nasty pick and roll and really reads the weak side of the floor at a high level. Hell of a rebounder. The defense needs some work, but he competes there. So, and it's improved a lot since high school. It was pretty awful in high school, but it's gotten better. So I don't think he's ever going to be a lockdown defender, but he works hard. I think he can be hideable. I think he can be passable. So I don't know. I love him. I would take him as in the top 10. Pretty easily. Yeah, he's fantastic. Where do you want to go now?
De Silva. And then Perfect. You get to pick the last one.
Let's wrap up on De Silva, and then we'll jump into GG.
Because this one might be lengthy. But if you need to take a break, go for it. Cut me off.
No. Tell me what you're loving about Tristan.
I don't know what not to love. That's my problem. I just talked about Devin Carter was one of my favorite film dives. De Silva's probably in my top three. I was watching his film. I then brought up a draft order, and I just was going through every team. And I was like, he could work there. He'd be nice there. He'd be good there. And sooner or later, I was like, I'm rattling off every team. And I'm talking about, like, oh, he could be a great fit there. I was like, that should probably tell me something in my head of, like, I should have this guy higher up on my board. I've moved him up. I think he's going to be a potential. Like, I know he's a senior. I know he's older. I'm just talking about watching his film, what he brings to the table, the type of player he is. I think he could be the Jalen Williams of this class where we're watching draft night and De Silva went 12th. And funny enough, that's probably one of my favorite fits, is if he goes to OKC. And I'm just saying he could be the curveball guy that has a great pre-draft process and teams really like him. And then he just does a lot of things really good. Mm-hmm. He might not have this elite skill that everyone says, but in this class, he does a lot of things at a high level. And to go with it, he's 6'9". Albert saw him in person. Albert was like, he's much bigger in person than he looks on tape. And I was like, well, he looks big on tape and he plays tough. So
he does.
There's just some times on film I watch, like, he has that factor too of, like, he will go battle with people. He will outmuscle you. He's not afraid to go right at you. And then I see some good defensive upside. I see a lot of stuff I really, really like with his game. I think his shot's pretty. I think he makes the extra pass. I think he also has some fantastic playmaking in the pick and roll. You know what, Metcalf, what was my favorite part of his game? He's a fantastic cutter.
Yeah.
He is unbelievable off the ball, like with some of his timing and anticipation. Like I went and looked at Synergy and it was like 78 percentile. And I was like, that's a lie from what I'm watching. Cause he's just really good at understanding when to attack like his defender at the right time for like backdoors and off the ball. It's just a lot of, he checked a lot of boxes. I was just like, this one's going to be the redraft guy. This is going to be the Jaime Jaquez of this class that we're all going to be like, he's going to go to the Heat. So I don't know. I'm just a little drunk in love right now. Am I crazy?
No, welcome to the party. But you know, it's about time that you guys have kind of come around on De Silva. He just knows how to play. And yeah. I know you referenced Jalen Williams. I don't think you're saying that he's going to be the player that Jalen Williams
is. I'm just saying he's highs, the...
But the surprise, like, oh shit, he snuck into the lottery.
Yeah, like we're all thinking he's going to go 15 to 25, and I'm like, he might go 12th. Like, yeah. Someone might just be like, give us the Silva. Sorry, go ahead.
No, but like, I don't think Jaquez is a bad comp. Where when you look at what they were asked to do and what they did in multiple years of college, there's a lot of eerie similarities between them, where it just really stellar rebounders, good passers, high feel, high work rate, just versatility across the board. It's everything that you want from just kind of a plug and play forward. So I think he's an awesome shooter, awesome defender. He just knows how to play in a way that most guys, especially forwards in this class, don't. So I'm like, I currently have him 16 right now. And, you know, just behind Colin Murray-Boyles, but that's because I'm super high on him. But like when you look at him or Tyler Smith, I think there are a lot less question marks around De Silva. Him or Saloon, I think there are a lot less question marks around De Silva. Even like Filipowski, Kwame Evans, Ryan Dunn, Keyshawn George, Nick Clifford, you know, a lot of these guys where they kind of will probably fill somewhat similar roles or be asked to do somewhat similar things on an NBA roster. And I just don't have any question marks about De Silva being able to do them. Sure, he might not have the upside that some of those guys have, but his floor might be higher than most of those guys, like 50th percentile outcomes.
I guess I'm at a point with these guys where the upperclassmen that, like, it's, I'm trying to figure out how to explain this. High feel, smart, versatile, that rebound, can shoot. Like, what else do you need to do? I think we always, and then we're like, oh, he's a senior or he's a junior. I'm like, I don't give a crap. Like, he can play. Like, Jaime Jaquez, Jalen Williams, Brandon Podziemski, guys TJD. TJD. Like, I feel like when we get to a point where a guy does enough stuff good that we finally go, well, he's not the greatest athlete. That's my biggest red flag. Ooh. When I'm evaluating. If a guy does a lot of stuff great and you're like, well, he's not an awesome athlete. I'm like, wait a sec. You're finding something to point out right now because you can't, you have to say something negative about him. Yes, I understand. Like with certain guys, you might be saying like, well, he's slower, so he might not be able to keep up with the speed. But like, I'm watching De Silva. I'm like, he's 6'9 and can move. I'm not worried about his athleticism. Like I've seen him dunk on people. He's fine. He's also 6'9. Like how many times do we need to say that?
And Jaquez, strong and physical.
Yeah, Jaquez, everyone was worried about. And I was like, well, he had fantastic footwork and he is a good athlete. Like, dude was in a dunk contest for a reason. So I feel like when you get those guys where everyone's like, oh, I really like him. It's like, why don't you take the leap? Why can't you fall in love with him? Like, what is holding you back? And then someone will be like, well, and I'm like, you're fishing for a negative instead of just being like, I'm in. So I'm in on De Silva.
It's the curse of being fascinated by what could be instead of what already is.
And yes.
I think De Silva is kind of the poster child of that for a lot of guys, especially the forwards in this class, where like when we look at Tyler Smith or Saloon or, you know, so those are just the guys I kind of have in a similar range. But, you know, it's like, oh my God, but imagine what he could become. He could even become Tristan De Silva. We do this all the time.
Yeah, exactly. I'm like, why are we, But the, you know, it's the Family Guy. Like, well, what's in the box?
It could even be a condo.
It could be a boat. As much as we've always wanted one. You have the boat. It's Tristan Da Silva. Why do you want to try to get something that's not him? Because they're younger. And I just, that's the, I will always go to bat for the upperclassmen. It's like they got better every year. And now they're more NBA ready, but you want to chase potential and upside with this unknown commodity instead of you have this. Yes, he's older. Who cares?
Yeah.
Like the joke I always say with people is like, you always fascinated about age. It's like, how many times are you watching an NBA game and you're like, well, you know, nice score by the guy that's 28 years old. No, like who's ready to play NBA basketball? Like just doesn't make sense to me. Like if a guy's more NBA ready, we should be enjoying, we should be promoting their success for them saying, I'm not ready for the NBA. I'm staying in college to get better. And now I think Da Silva made the right decision and teams should jump all over it.
I 1,000% agree. And just to kind of emphasize your point on, he fits basically anywhere because what is he? He's a 6'9", toolsy, good athlete at the forward position who can defend multiple positions, rebound, defensive playmake, be a high-level connective passer, good off-ball scorer, all that kind of stuff. Really high-level complementary role player. What team in the NBA doesn't need that? So I'm just starting at 12 with OKC. Then you have Portland, New Orleans, Philly, Miami, Toronto, Orlando, Atlanta, Phoenix, New York, Cleveland. Every single team can find 20 minutes a night for this guy.
Every team.
Yeah.
Playoff teams will want to trade up for him, and a smart team picking the lottery, if they take someone like him, won't be in the lottery. Like I'm not saying right away. I'm just saying that's how you build your way to getting towards the playoffs. Like getting guys like Tristan Da Silva of being like, all right, we have a fantastic complimentary piece at 6'9" that can play to his strengths. And I'm not trying to be like, oh, he's a can't miss prospect. There's no such thing in the draft. Right. I'm just saying we need to start getting more excited about the guys that might have higher floors than chasing ceilings. Because Da Silva looks like a guy that could play at the NBA level for 10 years. We were saying the same stuff about Jaime Jaquez. Like, dude just gets it. Dude knows how to play to his strengths and knows how to play complementary basketball. And I just, stud. He's just a stud.
Couldn't agree more. Let's take our final ad break and then we'll dive into Gigi Jackson's rookie season. Okay, Rucker. Gigi Jackson, rookie for the Memphis Grizzlies. He ended up at 29 on our final big board last season.
He did.
He went with the 45th overall pick to the Memphis Grizzlies, which was a landing spot I think most of us really liked for him, given their kind of history of being able to develop these guys and the idea that he would be in the G League. At least this is my thought process of, all right, cool. He's going to be able to spend a lot of time in the G League, play a lot, learn a lot, and really mature down there. And now through the Memphis Grizzlies sustaining 8,000 injuries, he's playing a ton. He's getting a lot of minutes, getting a lot of run, which is in kind of a system and a context where there aren't really any ramifications right now, or expectations because of the injuries. So he's kind of being able to learn through his mistakes a lot right now. Gigi Jackson, what were your thoughts kind of coming into the year and the last year, big picture?
Coming into the year, this is going to get spicy because we were just really heating up during the Tristan Da Silva hour. So I appreciate everyone being patient with us. Coming into the year, there's a lot of people taking victory laps on Gigi. So congratulations. Mm-hmm. Good job. In all of my years of evaluating and following the process, probably the worst pre-draft process I can remember when I'm talking about his buzz. Everyone you talked to, everything you heard, I was just like, oh gosh. Like I just was rooting for him. We say this all the time. I'm never rooting against anyone. Gigi had the highest offensive upside, I think, of some of the guys in the class. Mm-hmm. Like we were all talking about it all year. We're like, despite the questions of him playing at South Carolina, despite the immaturity rumors, whatever. I'm not here to point finger. I'm just saying watching his tape, when things were clicking for Gigi, it was like, oh my gosh, if he figures this all out, he's the youngest guy in this class. He was reclassified. He was supposed to go to North Carolina. We were like, if he just figures it out, someone's going to hit gold.
Yeah.
Then he had the pre-draft process that was just rough. There's rumors he was sick. And then just everything was just, I was just like, oh gosh. So that being said, a smart team was like, hey, we're going to roll the dice and we're going to put him in our organization. We're going to be patient with him. When Memphis took him, I was like, ooh, that's a good place to go. And they put him in the G League, which is why the G League exists for guys like this. They let him get run, so he's not just sitting on the bench all year. And he started cooking in the G League. He started looking better, and injuries happen. Situations, yeah. Everything fits everything. And, you know, Gigi finally started getting some run, and he's been fantastic and looks like a guy that could be an absolute highway robbery for Memphis. And this is where I get really fascinated with young guys like this that have the early success, because I'm like, the second year is everything.
Yeah.
Like it really is. Like, he's got a golden opportunity to really be a serious piece of this team next year when they're healthy. So I'm very pumped about Gigi. I'm thrilled for him. I don't want this to seem like I was the negative guy. I just think he had to land with the right fit. And I think Memphis has been awesome for him. What about you?
Yeah, no, I entirely agree. I think it was last summer or end of last season, we were talking about Gigi as like, if he didn't reclassify, would he be the number one pick in this class? Yeah. And yeah, probably. Yeah. He's certainly playing like it right now. So on the season, he's averaging 13.4 points, 3.8 rebounds, one assist, 0.5 blocks, 0.5 steals, 1.3 turnovers on shooting splits of 43, 36, 75. Not bad numbers by any means for a rookie. It's been a really kind of interesting process. And he was the youngest player in last year's draft, correct?
Yes, I believe so.
And, you know, one of the big red flags that a lot of people had with him was some of the maturity stuff. And we saw it flashes. I thought a lot of that stuff at South Carolina kind of got overblown, but there's pre-draft stuff that, you know, leaked out. And even he said in interviews that he's gotten fined by the Grizzlies a couple times this year for, I think it's mostly been like being late to stuff. And that's stuff that's going to happen with young players, but he's owning it and I think growing from it. And I don't really have any concerns. I didn't then, and I don't really now, about some of that maturity stuff. What he's showing on the court is incredibly encouraging, especially when we look at him as this big, good athlete, kind of play finisher, especially as a shooter, where this season he's shooting 48% on corner threes. He's in the 55th percentile spotting up, the 61st percentile in transition, and the 60th percentile off the catch. The troubles come kind of when he's doing anything with the ball in his hands, where it's 22nd percentile off the dribble, and only kind of 34th percentile at the rim, which is a number that you would expect to be higher, but rookie, horribly depleted roster, it makes sense. The highs with him, and that's what this season I think really should be about, especially for him, is what are the peaks? What are the highs? And then how do you kind of follow up all of those? And the highs for him this year have been outstanding, especially for someone his age with the question marks, with the inconsistencies in his game. He's just gone out there and played, and he's played at a really high level in a context that is really free for him to kind of explore stuff, to experiment, to fail and learn from it. And I think that's exactly what he needed. And, you know, we at the start of the year, the probably idea was for him to do that just in a G League context. But I think him being able to do that in an NBA context against NBA competition, size, speed, physicality, is going to pay so many dividends going forward. Like you said, this could be absolutely huge for them next year once they're all healthy, once they're all back at full strength. This could be the kind of wild, the home run swing at the wing position that we've been hoping they would take for the last couple of years, that they might have hit on a little sooner than they anticipated.
It's what I love about certain teams, the understanding of like, let's draft smart. Let's get the pieces together of the puzzle you know, Memphis going to get Desmond Bane at 30, like trading with the Celtics, which still haunts me to this day. And then, but you like, okay, you got Ja Morant, you got the superstar. Then you try, okay, how do we build around him? You had Jaren Jackson, you had Steven Adams and Jonas for a while, whatever. And then once you have all those pieces in place, it's like, okay, now we can start swinging a little bit. And they were swinging for this idea of this wing that's versatile. And yes, Gigi was a swing in the second round that you're just like, hey, like, what's the risk here? Like, if we love them and it works, everyone has to understand, like, everyone's like, what? It's ridiculous that he fell. Well, the maturity stuff, like, there was intel about this, guys. Like, there, it's not crazy. Like, in, it's different to get intel from two people and be like, oh, that could be different everywhere else. When you get it from 10 people, it's like, whoa, like, it's, and then somebody else gets it from 10 other people. You're like, okay, that's a lot. So he has to learn. He had to learn how to be a pro too. Like Memphis is, you know, like, hey, look at the locker room. You got to learn how to be part of this. And I think he's done that with getting through the G League into now, like, big awesome stuff. It's one of the best stories about this rookie class. It's like Gigi's now becoming like, oh gosh, like a full off season for Gigi. If he's working his butt off, like, they're gonna be nasty next year if they're healthy, because they're gonna have like Marcus Smart back. So like, whatever they do in the starting lineup, but if Gigi is cooking as a sophomore leap candidate, then you put Gigi out with Desmond Bane and Ja Morant and Jaren Jackson. Whoa, like, there's firepower there. So I mean, he's averaging 21.1 points in his last nine games on 45, 35, 83. Like, that's good stuff. So, and only 1.9 turnovers. Gigi is taking off. I'm really pumped to see the growth. And, you know, I just want to see, like, what is he going to do in the offseason to take another step forward and be this more versatile piece? Because we never questioned the offense. We never questioned how talented he was. It was just, can he get somewhere that's going to be a great fit for him? And I think Memphis has been a perfect fit.
Yeah. And, but, you know, kind of at the same time, like, I know the maturity question marks or stuff that we had heard wasn't the only reason to be skeptical of him. Cause it's not like the on-court stuff was outstanding. Like, no, there were a lot of issues on the court in terms of efficiencies and play. The scoring efficiency wasn't awesome. The rebounding wasn't awesome. He would check out of games where he would just kind of disappear for long stretches. The assist rate and the assist numbers were like historically low. The defense was non-existent. It was a really bad tape season for him. So, and for those who stuck with it and, you know, held on to that top 10 ranking, there wasn't much to go off of besides the high school tape and just the full buy-in of the potential is too much. And the potential is currently looking like too much, especially on offense and especially on a team where he's not going to be asked to do too much. Once they're healthy and he's kind of eighth man in that rotation next year, assuming fully healthy, he's going to be used as an off-ball scorer. And that's where he's been really good. That's where he's been his most consistent. That's where he's found his most success this year. And that's incredible. The on-ball stuff has been rough. And hopefully this is him just kind of learning through just overcoming learning hurdle after learning hurdle that comes with being a young NBA player. But the lack of passing, the lack of playmaking vision, the lack of feel that we saw in college is also translated to the NBA as well, where and his assist to usage ratio is 0.36, which is in the 13th percentile. His assist rate is 7.6, which is in the 39th percentile. His turnover rate is 11.1, which is in the 43rd percentile. It's a lot of questionable decision making, but he's in a context right now where he can learn through those mistakes and kind of experiment and make those mistakes without it really damaging the team or his confidence or just his growth overall. On the other side of the floor, the defense has been kind of rough. 24th percentile overall on defense in terms of points per possession, 23rd percentile in spot ups, defending spot ups. And so much of that is the ball watching and stuff that we see from young defenders all the time, where he's just kind of overly helping into the paint. He's helping off of strong side shooters. He's turning his back on his guy and just losing them when they relocate. And then just the closeouts are wild and all over the place. And that's something we saw in college as well, where the fundamentals just weren't there. The consistency, the awareness, the attention to detail wasn't always there. Defending isolations, he's in the first percentile. Not ideal. He's also committing a shooting foul 29.6% of his isolation, defensive isolation possessions. And I think it's on that defensive end where that's going to have to be the real strides and huge leaps that he needs to take quickly in his career. Because when we look at the offensive stuff, Ja's going to have the ball. Bane is going to have the ball. Marcus Smart is going to have the ball. Those are the guys who are going to be the on-ball creators and scorers for that team next year. And he's proving right now that he can be an awesome, awesome off-ball shooter, off-ball scorer, and that's fantastic. If he can also factor in and really grow as a defender and figure out the fundamentals, the consistency, and just improve steadily across the board, that's where his value starts to skyrocket. And that's where we start viewing him on this healthy Grizzlies team as more than just an eighth, ninth man, and more as a sixth, fifth, fourth option in the rotation.
Completely agree. I mean, guys like GG, you don't want to try to make everything come together too fast, which is the hardest thing for a fan base and for us to hear. It's like you with young, youthful, crazy upside guys like this, you just want to keep adding something. You want to take baby steps with them. So next year, it's like, if we can get the defense to come along with his off-ball shooting, great. Yeah. Then the next year, all right, let's get his creative scoring bag. Let's unlock it a little bit. So like he can be the guy, we give him the ball and be like, go to work. We're never doubting GG's offense. I don't want everyone listening to think we're just like focusing on the red flags that were coming in, but they were legit. Like I watched his film and I was like, his highs are some of the best in this class.
Yeah. And no, I think it's important.
Like easily.
I think it's important for us to acknowledge those red flags too, because he's actively overcoming a lot of them and still finding ways to produce in spite of them.
Yeah. It's just with guys like that, you need to, an organization sits down and says, can we get him to buy in? Can we get him to buy into this? Yes. Whatever the red flags, like we have a chance to get a potential, the redraft guy, where if he stayed another year, he probably would have been a top 10 pick. If he had never reclassified, he went to North Carolina, probably was going to be a top 10 pick, probably top five, probably in the mix for number one, like Metcalf said earlier. So you had a chance at that position, like, hey, still very young. Can we get, do we have the foundation, the locker room, the guys in here that could get GG to see straight and say, buy into this, buy into what we're seeing long-term with you? He has, and it looks great. It's just now, can he continue to buy in of like, all right, let's unlock that defense. Let's unlock this. And then all of a sudden we're going to look up in 3 or 4 years and be like, oh gosh, GG's become a monster. Like, so I didn't want people to think that we're emphasizing like, oh, he's just immature. No, there was legit questions with his game, his film coming into the year. Despite how awesome the highs were, the lows were very loud. And I think it was just a bad fit, a bad situation with him at South Carolina, because he got the keys and they were like, mm-hmm. do whatever you want.
Yeah.
And that's a nightmare for evaluating because he wasn't held accountable. I know South Carolina benched at a point. I'm just trying to say, like, it wasn't the greatest film, but it's also the most important lesson. 1 year doesn't tell everything. And the fit, the experience, the situation at South Carolina wasn't great for GG. The fit now, the situation for Memphis with GG is fantastic. So it's awesome to see, and I'm pumped about it.
I don't think this rookie year could have gone, honestly, much better for him. It's incredible to see. But, you know, the whole point of kind of looking back on it and figuring out what changed is so we can kind of project that forward and apply it to this year's class. So when we look at this year's class, what can we take from it, or who does it apply to, where maybe they're a young guy in not an ideal situation and have struggled, but once in a different context, they can kind of improve or take those steps forward a little quicker than we thought. And maybe the upside is a little more realistic for them to hit a little quicker. So what does GG's impressive rookie season mean for this year's class?
Trying to figure out the name here, Metcalf.
I got two. You want them?
Yeah, I want to hear them.
So the first one that came to mind for me was Justin Edwards.
I was just looking at Justin Edwards. So love it. Right on cue.
Super young, really, really brutal season, at least based on what preseason expectations were. In a different context, is he able to kind of unlock some of those different skills that we fell in love with coming into the season and that he has shown flashes of throughout this season, where, you know, the last month or so of play, there are a handful of games in there where he looked like the guy that we thought was going to be the number one pick. That was the first name that came to mind. Another one who all around has had a much better season, but is Nikola Topic, who is the youngest player in this draft. Was dominant for Mega, went to Red Star, and I thought he looked awful. I thought he was really bad. But again, being that young, taking that huge step up in competition, in the middle of the season and kind of learning to play with new players against new opponents with the new coaching staff, that's really hard. That's a lot to ask of a guy. And it was only a couple of games. So
yeah, you're being harsh there.
Yeah. Well, I thought he wasn't good in those Red Star games.
No, that's fine. If he looked good, I would have said he's the number one pick. If he hit the ground running for Red Star.
Which is an unrealistic expectation.
No, I agree.
Have. So I'm not saying I'm doing that correctly, and I have to go back and watch those games, and I wish he would come back and play. Probably won't. But
I don't think he's gonna.
In the same kind of context, Gigi was the youngest player in that draft. And how many of his lows were because of that age factor and being that taking that big of a jump in competition. So, and I still have Topic top five. So I've trying to kind of view it as being that young, going against that high of competition is really, really hard.
Justin's the number one name that came to my mind. I thought about Cody, but I don't think that's probably no. You know what? I got a wild card one for you. A guy that I'm very interested if he's going to stay in the class or not. Carlton Carrington.
That's a little bub.
Young. I'm just talking about very young, very talented. I think the situation was better for him than Gigi, but I'm saying maybe that's a guy, if he stays in this class, because of how young he is, you let him just go run wild in the G League for a while, and then situation allows him to come in and maybe get some extended reps in his rookie year. Because, like, I don't want to go back to Gigi too much, but, like, the thing with Gigi that's, like, the injuries allowing him to play, like you talked about earlier, this is a big reason why Jason Tatum had such a good rookie year.
Yeah.
Because they had injuries and he had to play. And then all of a sudden, everyone's like, whoa, this kid's a stud. So, like, situation's everything. Like,
yeah.
You got to be ready when it's time for you. And I think getting these valuable reps, you know, we talked about Bilal Koulibaly with the Wizards when we did a previous one, like him being able to play this year. Like, because now these guys are going to have a full offseason of not having to do the pre-draft media coverage and go to the combine and doing workouts, all these.
Yeah.
Yes. Workouts and interviews. And you're going to 4-team workouts in 1 week. Like, now you get to breathe and then be like, what do I want to work on with my game? Go work in the weight room, be in the gym all the time. Like, go on damn vacation for once. Like, I just think the first off season, I say, is always my favorite with young classes, because you get to see, like, that's why we love going to summer league, because you get to see who's been in the lab, who's been working, who's really taken, like, okay. I love when guys come out that summer league and they're just, I'm not playing for long. Like, they're going to shut me down. So, like, I think Gigi's been great. I think there's a lot of guys in this class. Like, I think Justin Edwards could be one of those guys that if he stays in, I'm at a point right now, Mick, if I don't, I think he might stay in.
Yeah, so do I.
I would draft him and say, you're going to go get your confidence back in the G League for a while and then unleash him. Maybe like second year, but I think that's a guy like top of the list if we're talking about someone like this.
1000%. Just the one other name that I have to mention for contractual obligations, obviously, AJ Johnson. Just
oh gosh, I've been meaning to tell you. I started watching his stuff, and I was like, Metcalf's on something.
If he was at Texas, limited, this year, he would be a top 10 pick.
They're limited, but a couple of his highs, I was like, whoa. I like kind of got on the edge of my seat. And I was like, you know, very late hours of the night. But I was like, this woke me up. This gave me another 30 minutes of staying awake. Like,
he's fun.
Why did not play him more? So, yeah, that one's serious. But, yeah, that's a good one, too.
Okay. Let's figure out who we got for next week. Let me bring up the wheel.
Here we go. I've missed you.
Electric entertainment here. Production value off the chart.
Whammy.
Anthony Black of the Orlando
AB. Magic. That's a good one.
That'll be fun.
The hair cotton. You just don't see it anymore. That'll be a really good one. Orlando. What else we got? Green room?
That'll be fun. Yeah. Let's do it. Jump to the green room. It's time. America's most exclusive club.
Green room.
Only 14 prospects get in. We only have, I think, 11 right now. But it's based on vibes. It's based on prestige. It's based on potential. It is not our lottery rankings. It's about just who feels right. Who deserves to be in the club.
It's getting hot this time of the year in the green room. Things are going to get serious.
Space is getting limited. So currently in there, we have Jacoby Walter, Alexander Sarr, Ron Holland, Stephen Castle, Zachary Risacher, Nikola Topic, Cody Williams, Reed Shepard, Rob Dillingham, Dalton Knecht, Johnny Furphy. And then in line, Carlton Carrington, Kevin McCullough, Tyler Kolek, Tijane Saloon, Ryan Dunn, Dylan Jones.
It's been a minute. So this could get ugly. Yes.
We haven't done this for a couple weeks.
This could get ugly. So let's just, you know, we've gone over the time, whatever. And I don't care. Let's just have fun with the green room. So you tell me, nominee who needs to get out of line. What are you thinking?
I think we kind of need to purge the line here.
We got to cut some fat right now.
I think McCullough needs to go.
I agree.
I think Saloon needs to go.
I agree.
And I think Ryan Dunn needs to go.
I agree.
Okay. Anyone else?
No, I think that's good. I think Carrington's got to stay in because
he's getting some buzz. I don't know what to do with it.
Well, and he's got too much swagger not to be in line. We need some swagger.
If he announces that he stays, that he's staying in the draft,
will you have him in your first?
He's probably.
Yeah, I will too. I still have him in middle of my second because I'm preparing for him to say he's declaring.
Yeah, I probably need to put him back on my board just because.
Do we hate when guys say declaring while maintaining college eligibility?
It's
the worst
because it's like literally every player should do that.
Right now, people are doing, I'm declaring while maintaining college eligibility and entering the portal. And I'm like, what else do you got for us?
Yeah, it's like, are you also eating and living and breathing? Fantastic. Good for you. Okay, so I think in the club, we got to review a couple names. I have received questions about Jacoby Walter. I have been reviewing some of his film. The end process hasn't been ideal, but I think he has shown enough, and I am still optimistic enough. We were talking a little pre-show that I think he is hanging on.
I think he's still in. I just did a deep dive on his stuff, and I even texted Metcalf, and I said, I'm back in. I said I was more impressed than I was expecting. So I think I'm going to test the Baylor theory this year, and I will reveal what the Baylor theory is at a later time. But I'm cooking something with my R&D department, and we've created the Baylor theory. So I have a feeling that I'm going to gamble again to see if it's true.
Yeah. I think Jacoby's currently in that spot where he kind of, he left his booth. He went to the bar to get another drink. He's kind of struggling to find his way to the bar, and he's somehow been pushed towards like the well station at the very end near the door. It's getting close to where he's just almost getting forced out, but he's hanging on.
I think he just ordered a water. And he's starting to be like, okay, wait, I might be all right. He's going to the bathroom. He's getting himself together. He grabbed a Coke from the bar. He's like, okay, let me get my shit together. I feel good. A couple weeks ago, I would have said Jacoby's out.
Yeah.
Agreed. I'm back in. Agreed. He's back in. He's still there.
the joys of being patient. The other name, and this one hurts me. This one hurts my heart. Johnny Furphy.
Yeah, he's got to go.
Yeah, okay. I'm not going to fight you on
it. Is he going to line, or this is a new one? Can we move someone from the club to line?
Yeah, because that's what we did with Klingon. And then Klingon got hurt again, so we sent him home because he was in a boot.
Yeah, because
we don't allow boots in the club.
I'll put Furphy in line.
Okay.
Unless you want to just be like, no, he's got to go home. He's got to earn the line appearance again.
I mean, I'm refusing to completely sell everything on him. So I'm good with line. I'm good with him.
Okay.
I don't think he can be in, but
no, he's on it. He's in line. Okay.
Now. Who are we putting in line? Let's go with a couple names here just to kind of the line's getting a little thin.
Yeah.
I think Klingon needs to be back.
He's back in line. Absolutely. I think he's back in line.
He went out, grabbed a bite, and now he's back ready to party.
He got healthy. He got healthy. And then Donovan's able to come out. Like, okay, get him back in line.
He went down the block, grabbed a quick vitamin C.
Yeah.
Chugged it. Feeling good.
Can I nominate someone new?
Yeah.
I'm going to nominate Devin Carter.
Ooh, okay. I'm good with it.
Every group needs a bit of a wild card. Just a guy that, you know, might have a couple of screws loose, but it's just a great time. And you'd love to have if something went down. I think Devin Carter would probably be at the top of my list. Plus, we've talked about this before, probably a big Heat culture guy. So anytime we can have a Heat culture guy in the bar, in the green room, it's always good.
Dirty dancer in the comments. Jared McCain. I think he's 100% right.
All right. Jared McCain. He's in the line.
Love it.
Good hair, too. Another good hair guy. The painted nails would be a great conversation starter in the green room.
He's
going to
be electric on the dance floor. Electric. He'll be pumping it up on socials.
Yeah. High vibes. High energy.
Incredible vibes.
Incredible vibes.
Great, okay. Great call, Dirty Dancer.
That's a good one.
Okay, perfect. Anyone else? Say it. It looks like there's a name on the tip of your tongue.
Does Bezelis ever get in line?
Yeah, he does. Let's put him in line.
If he does it now, I don't know when he's gonna.
We gotta put him in line.
I'm gonna say this. Bezelis deserves to be in line because of the quote he just put out.
Yes.
Because he just challenged Zachary Richuchet, which is why he's not getting in, because we might have to get extra security because they might have a beef on the dance floor. So I think Bezelis, because of the quote, at least has to be in line. But like, we have to be talking in our earpieces to security of being like, okay, we need all hands on deck. Bezelis is about to enter the premises. So I feel like if he's not in line now, when is he ever going to be?
No, that's a great shout. He's got to be in line.
Okay. This is a good list.
This is much better. I'm feeling better about this. The line is.
Anyone else? Any last second names?
I don't think so.
Okay.
I don't think so. All right. So we have Furphy, Carrington, Kolek, Dylan Jones, Klingon, Devin Carter, Jared McCain, Modest Bezelis. Who's getting in? Only one gets in at a time.
I think Klingon.
Oh, I was going to say McCain.
Oh, no. McCain's got to get in. Oh, yeah, McCain's got to get in. He hasn't been in yet. Klingon just got back, so he might have to kind of like, hey, you got to wait a little bit. You don't have that much pull to just be like, oh, Donovan, what's up? Come right on in and skip the line. No, yeah, I think McCain's probably ahead of Klingon. Yeah, that feels right. That feels right. Okay.
Jared McCain, welcome to the green room. We're still not full.
Still not full.
Still not full. We're at 11 names. Jacoby Walter, Alexander Saar, Ron Holland, Stephen Castle, Zachary Risacher, Nikola Topic, Cody Williams, which might be on the nice.
Yeah, I thought you were going to nominate him to get out, and I was like, we're going to have a tough discussion.
Do we need to talk about it?
I don't know. It's the injured part that really is. Because I don't know why. Like, I watched that last game they played against Marquette, and like the first time he came in and ran up the court, I was like, oh gosh, Anka looks terrible. Like, it just looked horrible. It's just like he was doing the awkward run where like you clearly are bothered by your ankle. So it's like you can see your weight. Like every time you land, you're like, oh, like,
yeah,
almost if you roll your ankle and pick up basketball and you're like trying to play three more games, you're just like, ow, ow. Like, I was like, oh gosh. Someone on YouTube commented that he's no good because he comes off the bench. And I was like, tell me you haven't watched the whole basketball year without telling me you haven't watched.
Perfect.
I don't know. Does he come out?
I'm going to say no.
One more. One more.
Yeah. I'm going to say no for now.
He's swapping with Jacoby. He's close.
Yeah. Yes. I think he's closer than Jacoby.
Okay.
Okay. So then Cody staying in, Reed Sheppard, Rob Dillingham, Dalton Knecht, Jordan McCain.
I can't kick Cody out too because I think there's a chance J-Dub would DM us.
Friend of the program.
And we love J-Dub.
We don't need him coming at us.
No. ELE. I'm kidding. If he deserved to be out, I would be out. But
yeah. No, I know.
I don't want J-Dub to go.
All right, Rucker. This is a blast, as always. But he is Tyler Rucker. You can find him on Twitter at Tyler_Rucker. I'm Tyler Metcalf. You can follow me at TMetcalf11. You can follow all of our stuff at No Ceilings NBA across all socials and on YouTube. For everyone hanging out and watching, thank you so much. The just seeing the viewer numbers continue to rise by the episode is incredible. The download numbers are incredible. Just the traction at the site has been phenomenal. We love you all. Just can't thank you enough. And let's have a hell of a run up to the draft. It's going to be a really fun time. We got a lot of really fun March Madness games going on. Rucker, we got to get you out of here because your Wildcats are in a nail biter right now.
Yeah, they were down double digits. So I'm pretty excited. But I don't know. Should we keep talking on the podcast?
But NoCeilingsNBA.com, No Ceilings across all socials. Thank you, everyone, once again. If you enjoyed this episode, please make sure to subscribe, leave a review, and 5-star rating. Till next time, see ya.